Playing word games on long car journeys feels like a very British thing to do, but perhaps every culture has its own version of this pastime. In our family, when we've exhausted I Spy, but still have many miles to travel, we sometimes dream up questions such as, if you could meet one famous person from the whole of history, who would it be? More thought than you might expect is involved in responding. While your instant reaction might be Nelson Mandela, when you start imagining what you had actually learned from such an encounter, you might find yourself veering in the direction of Jane Austen or Julius Caesar instead. An ostensibly simple question such as, if you had to eat only one meal every day for the rest of your life, what would it be? Also demands precision and clarification of the rules. If, for example, I say fruit for dessert, would it then be legitimate for me to eat a different fruit each day, or do I have to specify a seasonal fruit salad to achieve that variety? And sometimes the issue is yet more complex. 5 years ago, when we were travelling to Palermo Airport after a particularly good holiday in Sicily, my son, then 16, asked, if you could either live the rest of your life in the UK and never leave, or live abroad and travel as much as you wanted, but never be allowed to return to the UK, which would you choose? We had just spent 2 weeks gazing at panoramic views, visiting fascinating ruins, bathing in warm crystalline seas, shopping in bustling markets, eating leisurely al fresco lunches, tasting fabulous ice cream, watching spectacular sunsets, so the answer appeared to be a no-brainer. And yet, I hesitated, pondered, and eventually replied, I think I'd have to stay in the UK. But why? The dismay on my son's face was so palpable, I felt I'd lost any claim I'd ever had to being a cool mother and would now forever be cast as tragic. So I was required to justify my reasons. I would miss my family and friends, but they could travel. I would miss London, the art, the theatre, the ballet. But you'd have a choice of Paris, Berlin, Venice, Rio, St. Petersburg, New York. I want to live in an open, tolerant, liberal democracy. But so are lots of countries. Italy, for example. You love it here. Ultimately, I decided it was about language. It's not that I don't like learning new languages. I love the challenge. But I've always considered myself lucky to have been born a native speaker of English. It has many more words than others and allows such scope for nuance, irony, and humour. As a writer and English language teacher, I am, quite literally, sustained by it. To be myself, I told my son, I needed to be able to express myself fully and freely. And since the rules of the game demanded I choose, and since I identified culturally and linguistically as a UK citizen, I would ultimately have to opt to remain. I then breathed a sigh of relief, thankful that this was never going to be a decision I would actually have to make. 4 years later, in the week running up to the EU referendum, I found myself back in Italy, researching a novel. I had lived in Rome in my gap year, and sometimes returning to a place where you've had a good time can be a disappointment. But the city was better than I remembered, or perhaps I was more able to appreciate it. I loved wandering along cobbled streets, turning a corner and finding myself looking at the Colosseum. I spent hours in Santa Maria Antiqua in the Forum, studying the continuum of religious observation through ancient, medieval and modern times. Our shared European culture emerging from the walls of one tiny church. The streets were teeming with people from all over the world. Tourists in the Piazza Navona and rich international shoppers in the Via dei Condotti, just as there had been when I'd lived there years before. But now I was struck by the fact that most of the waiters were not native Italians, most of the kitchen staff seemed to come from Asia, the selfie stick sellers from Africa. It felt as if Rome had returned to its global origins, colourful and hectic, but nowadays generally tolerant. Italians are welcoming, on the whole believing that those in need deserve kindness, that drowning people should be rescued from the sea. On my last evening, I rang my husband from the top of the Vittorio Emanuele monument at sunset and said that I thought it would be interesting to live in Rome for a while. "If we still can, after tomorrow," he replied gloomily. Gazing over the eternal rose-gold city that is so central to our European heritage, I dismissed his fears. For me, the first indication that things were taking an unexpected turn was the extraordinary weather across southern England the next day. Unusually forceful thunderstorms delayed my flight, and flash flooding closed transport links. Arriving at Gatwick in light summer clothes and sandals, I was drenched in the run from shuttle bus to car. The roads were choked, progress painfully slow. Ominous clouds threatened worse to come. My car broke down in the middle lane of the M3 in rush hour. When I eventually arrived home, I was too exhausted from my journey to stay up for the result of the referendum. The following morning, I opened my eyes, felt a slight thud of disappointment at finding myself no longer in Rome. When my husband said, "We're leaving," I felt as if I'd woken up in a country I didn't recognise, with a language I no longer understood. Brexit, a neologism I loathe as much for its lazy inaccuracy, surely UKEXIT, if anything, as for its implications, has redefined some of our most important words. Experts are no longer to be trusted.